So good afternoon. Welcome to, I believe this is DBI 203, where we're going to be talking about exploring the world's data with the Windows Azure Marketplace. My name is Peter Pushkevich, and this is my colleague Roger Mall. We're both senior program managers on the Windows Azure Marketplace, and between the two of us, we own the world of content onboarding. So we bring new publishers to the marketplace, help them figure out how to publish their data, how to price it, and how to expose it to developers and consumers around the world. So let me start by asking, how many of you folks are familiar with the marketplace at all? Great. That's awesome. Quite a big percentage. So for those of you who are not familiar, let me tell you a little bit about the product. We started about 2 years ago with a relatively simple mission. Big data was starting to become more and more popular, and folks wanted to use data in their applications. It turns out the stuff you get for free online often isn't the level of quality you'd want in a real application. But getting access to the real data that somebody's curating and paying attention to can be very painful. There's lots of kind of high-pressure sales situations. You find some data, but you can't access it immediately. Please contact our staff. We'll talk about special pricing and you know whatnot. It can be days before you would be able to get access to this data. It was often not clear what it would take as far as money, as far as terms of use. In order to get access to this data, once you had access, sometimes you got CSV files, sometimes APIs. It was a very inconsistent and messy story. And we wanted to bring some uniformity to it across the board. We wanted to provide a service whereby as the need for data and for services became more and more real in day-to-day development, you had a place to go where you had a predictable experience, you had high-quality vendors of data, and you could access it in exactly the ways that you want to within your applications. And so out of this was born Project Dallas, which is now called the Windows Azure Marketplace. So the marketplace acts as a broker or a proxy between content providers, the folks who own data and web services, and content consumers, which are developers or information workers, et cetera. What this picture is trying to show is on both sides, there are many various types of entities involved. In the production of data, you can scale from domain experts. I work with one content provider who kind of works out of his garage and produces a great deal of really valuable, interesting data about America's commerce system, but doesn't really go to the office, right? He's an expert in this space. He knows how to publish this data and make it really good, but that's really his entire business. Ranging all the way up to large data enterprises like, let's say, Dun & Bradstreet, for example, or many of our stock exchanges, which are strictly in the business of building out and managing data with huge workforces and experts and lawyers and accountants and et cetera. And so you just have this very broad range of businesses involved in providing data that want to sell it. And depending on the size and their level of investment, they have different needs as far as what it takes to get the data to the consumers, and we'll kind of talk through what that means. On the other side, on the consumption side, we kind of start off with the expectation that everybody's going to just want to pull data into Excel, which is absolutely true, but very quickly we saw the limits of that and have been expanding into other domains. So we do see small business and big business users with information workers that do want to pull this data into Excel and use it as part of their day-to-day lives. But very quickly, people also wanted to be able to, in, let's say, consumer scenarios with mobile applications, pull this data into apps and access it programmatically. Academia, folks who want to build, let's say, forecasting models for weather and need the base data to feed those models, again, programmatically. Governments using this data as part of their operations, small businesses. So we found as we've grown that on both sides of this equation, there's lots of folks who want to get involved, who want to publish data, who want to consume data, and that have been working with our marketplace. So what role do we play in this interchange? You kind of see that down the center. First off, we make data very easily discoverable. You have a typical e-commerce experience where you can search, you can read about what the data contains, you can see samples, you know exactly what the prices will be and how you're going to be charged for it. We provide a unified billing story. So for folks like the data the developer that I was telling you about who have very small businesses, it doesn't make sense to invest in credit card processing and kind of all this infrastructure level stuff. And with the marketplace, you get it out of the box. For a consumer, all of your bills come from one place. You're buying data from the data marketplace, and so you have that one relationship with Microsoft, and we take care of the back office work to make that functional. It's backed by the Microsoft brand, sits on top of Windows Azure, so highly scalable. We are consistently investing in expanding our ecosystem, so we talked about Excel was kind of the starting place, but then we've grown into other environments like Visual Studio, like SQL Server, and we can certainly talk about other touch points for the marketplace. And so we are creating this common exchange ground where it's just very, very easy to purchase or sell data. Core to the marketplace, and we are essentially four services. The discovery of data, and this means both in our application UI, as well as in the places where, if you're selling data, your consumers are going to be paying attention. So our Excel plugin that lets you directly within the context of a workbook find data sets, purchase data sets, import them as part of your day-to-day work. The ecosystem, so if you're publishing data, you really don't want to have to worry about the latest and greatest technology people are using to consume it. If you're consuming data, you don't want to worry about finding publishers who speak your language. So we abstract that away, and that just becomes a core marketplace service. So as long as you can give us data in some shape, and you can consume it in some shape, chances are we have the right in-between adapters to make that business relationship happen and make that data flow happen in real time. Monetization, so we have a big portion of our team who spends a lot of time thinking about how do we bill in interesting new billing models, how do we bill internationally, how do we expand our reach and thereby the reach of publishers and make this data available to everyone in the world. And infrastructure, so we want to make sure that whenever somebody wants to purchase or sell data, they're always able to do that with a very high SLA. So these are all things that are inconvenient to think about if your core business is consuming or distributing data, but are absolutely necessary to make those relationships work. Within the marketplace, we offer four primary types of content. The place where we focus the most attention, I think, is premium data and services. And so these are curated data sets. These are server-side algorithms like search or translation, which people are actively investing in and making better all the time. In order to fund those operations, they require that folks purchase their offerings. And these kind of become the core of our business, is creating this exchange for these premium services. Some providers, like the government, for example, actually deliver data sets and web services for free because it's part of their mandate. And so for them, we want to make it very easy to distribute that data so they can meet their commitments to the citizens, say, of the US or the UK, both of which we work with quite a bit. But they don't charge anything for this data, and so you can just kind of go sign up and use it immediately with no cost. We've also grown into the space of enabling the commercialization of software as a service. So if you're building a SaaS application and you need to figure out how do I charge my customers for it, that's really not part of my core business, but I want to be able to manage subscriptions and things of this nature. The marketplace does also offer for those developers application subscription lifecycle management APIs, and we still take care of all the billing and et cetera. And the developers take care of actually implementing the application and saying, well, here's what it means if you have a subscription to my app. So it's a very flexible model. And finally, catalog applications, which are the lightest weight version of getting into the marketplace. It says, I have an app. I want people to learn about it. I'm going to implement this subscription API, or I'm going to expose a data set in the future, but right now I just want the exposure. And so these become catalog applications, which take almost no effort to get into the marketplace. So in this session, with that background kind of in mind, what we want to show you is, through demos as well as the rest of the presentation, is how easy it is on top of the marketplace to take data you already have, to leverage an existing investment, expose it to the world with almost no development effort, set yourself up for making money off of it, and then immediately after exposing it, have somebody come in, take that data, consume it, and turn it into a real product that probably is different from what you would have anticipated when you published in the first place. And so over the course of the next hour, we're going to show you this entire flow. And with the app is pre-templated, but everything you're going to see is real, and it's really this easy. So to get that flow started, we need to talk about what is data and web services. What can you publish? And so there are two primary types of services that you can publish into the marketplace. One being Windows Azure SQL DB, which is the new branding that I was told to use. These are your in-cloud databases, which you can publish directly, or web services. And web services come in many flavors. We support many flavors, including OData, any RESTful XML services, as well as SOAP. And so if you have anything along these lines, we will be able to publish you with minimal effort on your part. So with that in mind, I'm going to hand things over to Roger, who's going to do the first part of our two-part demo. And you're going to see how easy it is to publish a data set to the marketplace. So Roger.
Thank you. So as Peter mentioned, my name is Roger. I will jump in as you would experience it from the marketplace itself, rather than jumping straight into the portal, just to show you how you would get here. So you've been told, or you want to publish some data that you guys have. You've put up, in this case, it will be data that's in the Windows Azure SQL thing. And so when you click on publish here, you'll see some information about how to publish. And as you scroll down, there's a link here called Submit Your Application and Your Data. So by clicking on that, we take you to our publishing portal. Here you sign in, and I get my credentials, which are here. Here I sign out. Where am I? Let's go back. All right, do it the old-fashioned way. Close the window. There's my mouse. Open a new window. Datamarket.azure.com. Publish. Scroll down. Submit. And I'm back. And now I sign in. Really? Let me try this one time, and there we go. All right. Paste my live ID at hotmail.com, and my password is, I think, that. And so now I'm asked to start creating an account, a publisher account in the marketplace. So I will enter my name, my last name, my email address, obviously that was the live ID I already used. My company name, I now work for Contoso. And my website is http://contoso.com. And I am asked to choose a company identifier. What is a company identifier, you may wonder? Well, we've got a little help menu here that basically says this is going to be a identifier, the unique identifier for your company in the marketplace, and this will appear in the URL to your offering. So I'm going to make my company, my unique identifier, be Contoso19. And an overview of my company, we do stuff. And the company type is a company as compared to an individual. And these are for the billing issues that as you sell your offer in the marketplace, we will also take care of the tax and collecting the tax. And in some countries, we will also do the tax remittance on your behalf. So the tax profile type is important. Close that. And now I register. I am asked to accept, to read and accept the publisher agreement. I not only have read this, but I actually helped write it, so I'm not going to read it all right now. And I agree. So now I'm actually in the publishing portal. So from here, the flow to actual to publishing, we've got the steps here. There's first you connect to a data source because we're publishing a data offering. The next step then is publishing the offering, and so publish, think of that as you're going to then build the offer on top of the data source that you connected to in the previous step. And the settings tab is for setting up things like account information, your bank profile, your tax information, the things we would need to do sort of the administrative stuff with your account. And then promotions are the ability to create special promotions, either one-time or continuous promotions on top of an offer. And I'll actually walk through that a little bit so you can see how that works as well. So to get started, I will jump over here to Connect and migrate my way over here. Oops, went too soon. I'm going to connect to an existing Windows Azure database that is, rather than typing all of this, I'm going to use copy-paste, which is particularly useful on the server. And my database.
And so what Roger's providing is just essentially the connection string to any internet visible SQL Server instance. So really no magic, and this is stuff that folks are working with all the time if they're managing large databases.
And my password is faster to do it that way. And now I connect. So now what the portal is going to do is it has set me up with this database. You can see now that I've got one of the data sources has shown up here. And now I can go on to that next step, as I mentioned, the publishing. So what I'm doing now is I'm adding the offerings on top of the database. And one of the things that we've set up in the marketplace is the ability to do multiple offerings on top of a single data source. So if you have a large data source that has, I don't know, say, you know, 50 columns in it, you can go and build multiple different SKUs on top of that data source by selecting which columns are exposed or queryable or are returned. So you can go and create different levels of service, different levels of offerings based on a single data store. So as I go into publish here, you'll notice that I've got a new list of options here. The first thing is selecting which data source I want to use. So I could have connected to multiple data sources as part of my publisher account, and then I can build a bunch of different offerings on top of each of those data sources. In this case, I just have the one. So I choose that, and now what's happening is the service is going back, reading that database, and coming back with what it found. So here you can see I've got two tables, and in each of those tables I have three columns. So I can come in here and I can say I want this data to be exposed. To the point I was saying earlier about being able to create multiple SKUs, it's by selecting these checkboxes here that you can expose, make something queryable, or hide it, and manage your business and your SKUs on top of that. For this example, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make the data column non-queryable, but you'll see later that it actually does return. So I uncheck the box for queryable there, and now I save it, and I go on to the next steps of creating the offer. So we have some support information we look for here. This is information that is what we will use to help manage your offering in case we find some issues with it as the business is going on. Actually, I'm just going to kind of motor through these with random information so that it doesn't take a long time for me to do this. This is not the recommended way to do this, but it is the recommended way to do it in a demo. And I now move on to the next tab. Next tab is the offering details. This is kind of the meat of the offering, if you will, because what we're putting in here is this is the metadata that somebody will read and review to understand what your offering is and to make the buy or non-buy decision, as the case may be. So it's important here that you use the space here for the description and the long description, that you use this wisely, because this is what, as I mentioned, this is kind of the packaging. I'm going to name my offering my great offering. And the short description is, you should buy this. And the long description is, you really should buy this because it's great. Now I have another identifier. This identifier is part of how people will understand what your offering is and how they will call your offering. So this draft offering one, not really a great name for that. I will call it my great offering. And this space is gonna, oops. And my phone number is that. And my support website is ding. Okay. And now I can select which categories my offering will surface in the marketplace in. And this is important, again, for allowing people to find the information and find your offering. So it's important to pick things that are relevant to what you're doing. And my offering is real estate and points of interest and weather. It's a strange database. So for the sample images, the marketplace has the ability to load up images so that people can see how your offering is used. So you can put really whatever this image you want it to be, but what we recommend is you take something that shows kind of a cool visualization of your data being used. So as you kind of browse the marketplace, it'll be something that pops out to a user as like, oh, okay, I get what this data is. It's helping that buy decision. I have no idea where my logo is.
Desktop. Then there's a tech ed folder.
So I've got a sample image here, and I will open that. And then I will also add a logo. And I can then go in here and add additional information. So we have things like support links and other types of information that will help people not only understand what your data is, but also use your data. So that's basically what the rest of this page has. Then I jump over here into pricing and terms. Now, when you set up the pricing, there's a couple different things you can do here. As I mentioned, you can set up multiple prices, but what we call those is SKUs. So you can have a sort of an entry-level free SKU, and then sort of tier your way up with more expensive SKUs, where the difference can either be different data exposed, which would be a different offering, or within a single offering, you can go and create additional bundles, if you will, of transactions. So in a data offering, the monetizable thing is a query to the database. And so what you can do is do smaller bundles. So say, for example, a 100 query bundle is kind of the entry level. Maybe you'd make that free. And then at 500 queries, it would be, $20. And then 1,000 queries, it would be $30, and then unlimited would be, I don't know, $200. So you can go and set all of those different bundles inside, or SKUs, inside the pricing tab here. So I will just set this one as 1,000 transactions, and the price for that will be $25. And I will enable free trials. And a free trial is it's effectively a monthly subscription that a user gets. But what happens is it is a free month, and then at the end of the month, it automatically converts to a paid trial of this on this SKU. So the idea is when the user comes and goes to the marketplace, sees your offering, thinks, I think that's what I want, but I'd really like to use it, kind of wrap my brain around it, play with it a little bit. This is the way where you can get somebody to get their hands wet with your data without having to pay for it up front. What we do, though, yes?
So it's always an automatic opt-in, not an opt-out.
Yeah, so if I hadn't clicked this button, it would have been opted out. So it automatically, the default is there is no free trial, and then you click the button to opt in.
So if I
Yes, yes. And when the person subscribes to that, to help complete that, because the idea is not to give people your data for free, the idea is to get them using it and think, yeah, this is what I want, and then make it really easy to convert to paid. When that person subscribes, and you'll see this, when that person subscribes to that free trial, you are required to enter your credit card so that we've already captured the payment instrument so that when it's time to make that conversion, we're not saying, oh, hey, I hope you like that. Now here, enter your payment stuff. It's going to start charging you. Instead, we make it a seamless transition. Did you have a question?
No.
OK. And I will click on require promotion code, and I'll show you that in a little bit here. And then you get to choose what countries you want to make this offering available. So what we've done is we allow a large global sales reach. But what we don't want to do is sort of force you into all of the markets that we support. You may have different offers that you want to offer for, you know, France versus Germany or whatever it is. So you can build different offers, or depending on what your data is, you can have one offer and then just say, I want it available here, 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 and there. And in this case, I'm going to make my offering available. It's going to be the island offering, so it's available in Trinidad and Tobago. It'll be in the UK, and let's pick another island in here somewhere, Singapore. So this is where this offering is going to be available. And I click save and close. And then I enter my terms of use. On the terms of use, this is your business. You can pretty much, just like the pricing, just like everything else, as you see, you sort of choose to run your business how you want to run it. One thing to keep in mind, the more restrictive you make these terms of use, or the denser or harder to read, the less likely it is you're going to get a lot of adoption on this one. So I recognize if your primary business is selling data and you have markets that you want to protect, I recognize that business reality. But keep in mind, a lot of the people who are going to be coming to this site to purchase the data, they are going to be developers. They're not going to be lawyers. So if you present them with some big, lengthy terms of use TOU, you will probably lose some people at that conversion point because they look at it and say, I can't even figure out if this allows me to do what I want to do. So kind of with that in mind, so keep that in mind as you're putting in your terms of use here. My terms of use are going to be very liberal. You can use this for whatever you want to use it for. And I need to fix that. Ding. And then we also ask you to point to your privacy statement. And the reason for this is we have some reporting, and we'll be bringing additional reporting online as time goes by. And so the reason why we require the privacy statement is, depending on what you want to do with the information you get in your reporting, it's important to let the end user, the subscriber, see what you're going to do before they say, yes, I want this, and yes, I recognize this person may use whatever information you get from the report for marketing or whatever statistical evaluation purposes you want. So this is the reason why we require the privacy statement. And that's where my privacy statement is. minus the comma. And so now I have completed setting up my offer. And when I get to status and review, the last step, you can see that on the validation, all the validation checks, there was, you saw, some inline validation. We also then go through and do an additional validation in the back end and make sure that everything is as it's supposed to be. We then set up a review where, as you can see, you've got some preview options, and I'll walk you through both of the preview options. And then there's some other steps here that we talk about in the validation, and you can see we're all green except for in the settings for the payouts. So setting up the bank account, setting up the tax profile. But since a lot of people, the developer or the business guy, or the combination of a developer and business guy who's building this offer, you've got the developer who's doing kind of the technical connection to the database, and then you've got a business guy who's writing the offer detail page and probably the pricing information, these are probably not the people who have the financial information, so this is the reason why we've kind of separated these out into sort of discrete steps so that people can kind of do their thing and be unblocked, and then when it gets to be time to finally publish the offer, that's when we go through and say, hey, you've got to also finish these steps over here. So let me show you what the preview is. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to jump into the preview in the marketplace, and this is where somebody will see what the offering is. So when I mentioned that the offer descriptions were really important, this is why, because this is really all somebody sees about your offer. So again, what you write here is going to be really important. My description is perfect because people would quickly understand that, yeah, this is great data, so you should buy this, so I would be inclined to buy it. This support link is the link that you provided in the portal, and then here are the categories that you selected. Remember when I mentioned there were links on the page and I said you can upload supporting documentation and things of that sort here? That's where this right here is where these things would appear if I'd actually uploaded some of that. So basically the idea here is you can go in, sort of go back and forth if you decide, well, that description really isn't a good description. Before you submit, you can see what it looks like and then say, ah, it's not really what I wanted. You can jump back and do some tweaks, edits, sort of version your way through until you get to the point where you're like, perfect, I'm ready to ship it. The other place you can review the offer is what we call the Service Explorer, and this is actually how somebody consumes the data. So the Service Explorer itself is kind of, think of this as, for lack of a better term, a really deeply interactive SDK. So what you've got here, the URL for the exposed query, this actually is the query that a developer would call to your database to, well, I'll run the query. So here's a query that I just ran. Here's the data that came back. And here's the query itself that I just actually called. So a developer would call this query. What the developer will get back is XML. And what we return here in the Service Explorer is both the XML and the data itself in a table. And the reason why we do it in the table is for a lot of people, even developers, it's a lot easier to look at this table and say, okay, that's the data I would expect, than to go through here and parse through the XML and go, yeah, I think that's what I want. But we give you both because as a developer, being able to parse through this and do something with it is going to be really important. So I'll go in here and run another query. There were two tables, remember, in the offer that I set up. And I will run this query. And now you'll see I've pulled out a different table, different data. So one of the things I also wanted to show you here is on company info, you may remember that I turned off one of the queryable fields, and that was data. So when I run this and I move it over to the XML, you will see that here is the data. So the data element came out of the database because I didn't turn off don't return it. I just said don't query it. So you can see here under the optional parameters that I don't have a parameter that I can query. So once you've decided this is the offer you want, then you come back here into the My Offerings and you go through the save and close, and you hit the, oops, I should have actually gone back. Let me go back to publishing. I have to show you how to submit it for approval. Forgot the best step. Go back to My Offering, open it, status and review, and request for approval is where? Oh yeah, I can't request for approval. I knew I was forgetting something. I have to enter my account, my financial information. So that's how easy it is to publish. The idea here is we want to make it easy for both people who, as Peter said, who have a existing data business. This is what they do. They sell business. But we also want to make it really easy for people who have interesting data that maybe they don't sell. It's not part of your business, but you realize that, hey, you know, this data, kind of these artifacts of running our business, that we need to kind of keep this data somewhere. If we were to go and expose a couple of these data elements, a couple rows, a couple columns, whatever it is, we might be able to make a little extra money and turn sort of our data storage from a cost center into a bit of a profit center. Back to you.
Thanks, Roger. So this is always a fun demo to give because it generates a lot of data about the occupations of everyone in the audience. We kind of go through the business side of it, and some people's eyes light up because of my terms of use and I'm making bucks, and other people are probably trying to compile something on the fly. Now we kind of switch gears into, okay, what does this mean to developers? And I bet you we're going to have a bit of a polarization in the other direction. So it's always kind of fun. So I kind of want to recap a couple of things that are going to be interesting for the remainder of the demo. What Roger just did in 15 minutes is really create something which can be sold to customers, which they can interact with on the web, they can interact with through web services, and that's monetizable. And there was zero developer involvement. I mean, I gave him a connection string before the demo, but that was it. And so the marketplace allowed him to create this whole new profit center, as well as a essentially API layer on top of a SQL Server database, right here live on stage, which is really cool. If you guys were trying to, or if anybody's trying to monetize an API, that's a considerable amount of development work if you're doing it by hand. And we've kind of just provided that as a platform component in this product, which can be very helpful. So a couple other things I want to kind of point out before we go forward is, on top of this database, we do now have an API layer that is consumable from almost any environment. This URL here that expresses the query, actually, let me make it a little bit more interesting. I'm going to plug in an ID for the company info that we want, which filters down this data. So we now have a URL here that's it follows the OData protocol, which I can copy and paste into a new tab. So at this point, we're outside of the marketplace UI context. It's an arbitrary call to a web service. And after asking me for some basic auth credentials, you can see that I have an Atom feed of exactly the data I just requested. And so let me show you that to you guys. So this is the same data that was in the table, but I just queried it by calling a web service. So database, now web queryable. If I want to build a browser application, I can actually just say something like $format equals JSON, and I now have a JSON, trust me, it's a valid JSON payload, and so now I can have a JavaScript application that's trivially accessing this data, again, with no development part on the side of the publisher. So really cool stuff. And every time one of these APIs is called, all of our authentication code kicks in, the metering code kicks in, so you're getting paid. You know nobody's stealing your data. You also notice that all of the URLs go through the marketplace, which is a really cool security feature, since nobody knows where the database really lives except for us. Folks have subscriptions with the marketplace, but only the marketplace has a subscription with the underlying data service. And so the location of that service, the username and password, all of that is completely opaque to the end user. And so there's very little risk to your underlying systems. So with that in mind, let's take a look at what we can do now that we've kind of published this database. I'll switch back to the deck for a second. Clicker. So the data set that we published is a very small subset of the EDGAR SEC filings. Where you specifically took the descriptions and partial product lists for three companies, Apple, Google, and Microsoft. And we want to now take those and display them in a Windows 8 application. But just displaying that data is kind of boring, especially in as diverse of an audience as what we typically get at TechEd. So we want to be able to augment it in some interesting ways. One way that we want to augment it is actually add the ability to translate that data on the fly. We have some textual descriptions of each of the companies. I really want to be able to take those from English and translate them into French or Japanese or whatnot, because for the customer base of this application, that really makes sense. It turns out that the Microsoft Translator API is available in the marketplace, just like this data set is that we just published. So I can now, under my single account, get a subscription to Translator and start including that in my application. So we'll see exactly that as we go. I also want to be able to pull in some additional context. Apple has a bunch of cool products, and I want to be able to show you images of those products, but they release so fast with like the iPhone, for example, that I'm probably always going to have out-of-date images. Wouldn't it be neat if I could reach out to the web and just say, give me pictures of the iPhone, which is exactly what I can do through the search API. And so what you're going to see is on the fly, as we're looking at these product lists, we're actually going to go off and get more data about them and learn about them, again, through another service that's published in the marketplace. And so what this really shows you is, on top of publishing your own data, you're getting into an environment where you're now mashing up multiple services, multiple data sources, all with the same protocol, all with the same account, all with the same billing platform, et cetera. So it's very simple and lets you build powerful applications quite quickly. So with that context in mind, I'm going to go ahead and switch back to my demo machine and take a look at what this looks like. So when Roger created this preview, he mentioned that we haven't published yet. He hasn't put in his tax information or et cetera. But we felt pretty strongly that shouldn't stop developers from being able to experience the APIs that their company is going to be producing. And so this preview URL can actually be consumed even right now before any feedback has come from the marketplace in order to build out applications. And I'm going to take advantage of that because I want to use this data source as part of the app I'm going to show you. And so I'm just going to kind of keep this preview URI in mind, and we'll come back to it in just a second. The other thing that I need to do is go to the marketplace and get subscriptions to these other two services that I'll be mashing together. The first one being Bing Search. And so here you see an already published offer. You see along the right, these are these variants, the pricing buckets that Roger was describing. It turns out with Bing, there's a free one, so I'm going to choose that one. Here you see the terms of use that they selected, the privacy policy, et cetera, and I'm just going to click Sign Up. Since this is a free offer, it never asked me for a credit card, but as to the question we had earlier, if this was a trial offer where it does convert into a paid offer, we would have asked for a credit card. I'm just sure you guys are not interested in my credit card number on stage, so I decided to skip it. Okay, so I just bought the free trial of the Bing Search API, and the other one that I need is the translator. And so I can go into the marketplace, I can search for translator, and I can get the free subscription to the translator as well. Sign up. So now if I look under my account in the marketplace, I can see my data, and for the two published offers I'm subscribed to, I have them right here. I can manage them all from within one UI. I see how many transactions I've used so far, et cetera. So it's a very nice little management dashboard. So I now have the three data sources that I want to use, and I want to bring those into Visual Studio in order to build an application that uses them. And this app is pretty baked. I'm going to show you guys how to connect to the data sources and how to configure them, and then we'll kind of walk through what the code is doing. But the kind of interesting pieces from this demo's perspective are, how do you get access to this stuff from within code? So let me actually go ahead and just delete this. So the first thing I want to do is add a service reference to the data service we just published, which has this company information we've been looking at. So in order to do that, I can go back to this service root URL I'll use this one up here. So this URL is the unique entry point into the API that we're publishing. And I can take this and I can bring it to Visual Studio and just stick it directly into the add service reference dialog. Since this is a fully OData compatible feed, when I hit go, Visual Studio automatically identified what's lying underneath of it, and it's ready to generate for me an access proxy to both the company info and product info. As Roger was setting up the offer, you noticed that there was a company unique ID and an offer unique ID, and so these come into play right here in the URL. You can see Contoso 19, the company identifier, and then the migrate offering, the offering identifier. And so that's how we disambiguate between which offers of a particular publisher you want to have access to. I forgot what I needed to call this thing, so let me take a quick look at the code. Company data source. Right, and so I'm just adding this service reference. And by doing so, I now have the proxies I need in order to call this service. So this class that we're looking at here, dataclasses.cs, is a simple wrapper around that web service that lets me do a couple of things I need to do in order to access them. The first is I need to have an account ID, and this is kind of a random one from my developer account, so let's plug in the real one. On this page, as well as in your accounts page, you'll see your primary account key for your marketplace account. So I said earlier, the user never knows where your database is, and your database doesn't have credentials for this user. The user has credentials with the marketplace. And so when the user authenticates against the marketplace, we're wanting to embrace as many authentication schemes as we can. Today it's basic authentication, two-legged OAuth, and three-legged OAuth. Since OAuth is kind of a whole topic by itself, I'm not going to dive into it, but the primary account key is what I'm going to use as my basic auth credentials when accessing this data service. So I'm just going to grab it from here, and now I can go over to my application and plug it in as this account ID. The second thing that I need is, since these proxies are agnostic to the underlying data source, which is important actually in this scenario, I need to plug in what the true service root URL I want to talk to is. And the reason that's important here is you'll notice this word preview at the end of the service root URL. That's there because we haven't officially published this offer yet. So I can play around with it, I can test it, and it's going to behave exactly as it will in production. But once it's published, I'm going to need to remove that word preview from this URL. I don't have to regenerate any code. It's just a small configuration tweak. So with this in place, what I'm going to do is create an instance of the proxy for talking to this data set, and I'm able to call through that instance in order to query the marketplace. So let me just kind of adjust this code. I should really just do a rename. Since we're using OData and the proxy was generated based off of the OData metadata, you can see that everything is strongly typed, so my queries are going to be strongly typed. I can inspect the return objects. I get comments for those objects that tell me kind of what I'm dealing with. And so it provides you with a pretty nice developer experience out of the box. So, okay, let's just walk through this very quickly to see what it's doing. I define my account ID and the root URI. I have some static list I'm going to use to cache this data client-side, so I'm not constantly going back to the server and dealing with network traffic issues. When I say init company info list, I go ahead and create a new instance of the container. This is the wrapper around the proxy. I give it a network credential, so it's using basic auth, using my account ID for both username and password, since that's kind of the easiest way to get it right. And then I have a call here that goes off and fetches all of the data available for that particular list and stores it in my list on the client side. So very, very easy code, essentially three lines. The rest of the stuff is kind of dealing with continuations and making sure we get the whole list and not just a partial. And with this, I have access to all this company data. The next thing that I want to do is to enable myself to use Bing search in order to find images associated with that data. And so you're going to see a very similar model here, right? We have the Bing search URL, and we have this account key. I'm actually going to use my real account key again so that the demo isn't vaporware. Okay, and so I have my account key. I have the root URL, and you'll notice there's no preview here since this is actually a published data set. And this adapter exposes really just one method, perform search, which you pass the query string as well as the market, so like US or France or whatnot, and a callback that should get called once we make the network call, it comes back and we have the parse results. When this gets called, we create a new instance of a Bing search container. Again, this was defined through the proxy. And on that Bing search container, let me actually just show you the IntelliSense here. As I'm working with it, I can say image, which builds for me a image query. And you can see that this query has the string for what we're looking for, a string representing the market, a string asking about how do we want to filter the results, you know, strict or safe or whatnot. This is kind of family safety. I can pass to it a latitude and longitude telling the search API where I am, so it gives me the most applicable local results, and I can even pass in some filters that reduce the set of images returned. And so I get all of that just by using this proxy, and so it makes it very easy to develop against. You can see we're going to use strict search since this is a demo, and who knows what kind of stuff might get returned otherwise. And then we just kick off the query and have it execute. The exact same thing is done for the translator service. The API surface area is slightly different, but we're going to configure with the account key and kick off some queries. So for this application, I'm not going to go into kind of the details of how do I take these results lists and map them into UI elements or whatever. There's talks that are very focused on building great Windows 8 applications, but you can see that for adding the let me change my projection options. In order to add these data services into the application, it was really very, very little work that I needed to do. And so let's restart this and see what the application looks like. That'll teach me to demo on a relatively new OS. Okay. Looks promising. Okay, cool. So here's our little app. In the companies table, we had just the three companies. So you can see each of them has a tile here. I can click on a company. What you see over on the left is the text that we pulled back from the database that we just published to the web. This text can be translated using Bing Translator. You can see this is happening on the fly into English, French, or Japanese. We're taking the data from one data source, we're passing it into the Bing Translator, we're getting back a response and sticking it on the screen. You can see we're actually doing the same for product names here in Japanese. It's pretty obvious. Now, if I want to see images of the products offered by this company, I can click on the product name, and here are the top image search results for that product name. And they're actually location aware. So we sent off that we want a image search for the Japanese market or for the Spanish market. So if I click on Spanish, You can see that the images are changing. They kind of seem to be relatively similar for Microsoft products. But actually, let's take a look at Android from Google, which Roger was pointing out to me earlier, had kind of interesting results. So in English, you can see it's exactly what you expect. But if you go to Japanese and click on Android, it's a very different result set that we're getting live on the fly. Right, so let's recap what we just did. We had a database that no one had any access to. We were able to take advantage of kind of the split between the business guy and the tech guy. The business guy was able to get this thing published in about 15 minutes. When it was published, we had service endpoints that I can access from C#, I can access from JavaScript, I can access from anything that's able to make a web request. I had a built-in subscription model and monetization model that just comes out of the box. I did no work to develop it. And then by adding a few service references and setting my account key, I was able to take three such services, mash them together into an application, and have a really nice data-driven experience with, you know, images and translation and my own data all thrown together, you know, on the order of minutes. And of course, yes, it is hand-waving around what does it mean to build that Windows 8 application, but somebody would have to figure that out anyways. Getting the data into it should be as easy as it can, and I think we've shown you guys that by going through the marketplace, we've actually made that super easy. So this kind of brings us to the end of the planned demo. We really wanted to show you the end-to-end lifecycle and how powerful this can be for exposing or consuming data. So I'll go ahead and open up the floor to questions at this point. Please.
Just a quick one. Can you confirm what we're looking at here? So each of those is a set of data?
So, good question. So there are three data sets involved here, right? There's actually a web service and two data sets. So coming from our database was the text over here on the left and the names of the products up here on top. We took that data and client-side passed it to the translation API so that we could get back the same data but transformed into a different language. Right, so that's where we're using the second service. And then with the transformed terms, we passed them to a third API, the search API, that got us the images specific to that locale. And so what we're really seeing is probably one data source, there's one database involved, that's then mashing together two additional services on the fly in order to bring you this highly customized experience. Yes, sir. Yes. Yes. Great question. So let me actually show you what that looks like. Going back here to my, this is kind of going to be the easiest way to demo, and we can talk to other ways to do this. Going back here to the Services Explorer where we are able to query the data. Let me just bring back kind of everything. Actually, the other table has more rows, so that's kind of more interesting. Right. So here I have a bunch of data, and you want to bring this into a BI environment. There's a couple of really great ways to do this. One is that I can actually directly from the marketplace export this data as a comma separated values file or an XML file. I can also export directly to Excel Power Pivot. And when I export to Power Pivot, which is OData aware, Power Pivot is actually able to use this querying language in order to directly interact with the APIs. And so instead of downloading the data and dealing with it in an offline fashion, you can use Power Pivot to query and filter and then bring down the data and refresh it. Or you can download into Tableau, and so we kind of take care of that conversion for you on the fly. And so by having these mechanisms in place directly in the website, it makes it very easy to kind of do a dump of the data. We also have a Excel plugin for the marketplace, which allows you to take that data and from within the context of Excel, look at your subscriptions and download your subscriptions and filter them. And so that gives you kind of a richer experience. And so I think those would probably be the primary BI kind of information worker scenarios. We do have also richer integration in some very scenario specific areas. And so I'll mention them. If somebody wants to ask the question, I'll be happy to go into it. But a really great example is SQL Server Data Quality Services. So what these are, we have some providers who are really experts in fields like addresses. And we know that many of you have databases with tables of addresses that you've collected maybe through customer surveys or things of this nature. But you probably don't have the same level of expertise. And so it's beneficial, let's say if you're going to send out a mailer and you think I have a 30% bad data rate inside of my database that I want to clean up, and so I want one of these experts to come in and clean up my data for me. Well, some of them are publishing through the marketplace in such a way that you can hook up directly into SQL Server and say, please look at this table and clean up the addresses for me. And so this is kind of a more of a stretch BI scenario, but with this deeper integration, there's actually a two-way communication, and your data gets cleaned up for you on the fly by these providers through the marketplace. And so then when you're doing BI even on data you own, you're getting much cleaner results because you have these experts involved in a well-defined fashion in your end-to-end data flow scenarios. That answer your question? Great. Sorry? So we don't have released at this point a connector that would dump this data directly into SQL Server. But you know, one of the beautiful things about conferences like this is I happened to be sitting right next to the SQL Server data tools guys yesterday, and we had exactly that conversation, and there was a lot of excitement. So, yes, sir. Roger.
Oops, I forgot to show that. Great question. Let's go back to the portal. Let me show you. So back in the portal, this is my my offering. I've got a couple options here. I have promotions that I said I'd show you, and I almost lied. So I clicked on promotion, now I click on add a promotion, and here's our setup dialog for creating a promotion. You're able to go and create your own promotion codes based on whatever your requirements are. This code could be, you could call it the tech ed special, or I think you were talking about some other type of a code. I mean, it could be actually a SKU code if you have sort of product numbering in your for the data you sell. You know, it could be product LP457J, blah, 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 whatever you want to call this. Then you can put a more friendly description here. And then you get to set what your discount is. So the discount has to be a round number, but it can be either zero, which isn't much of a promotion, or it can be 100%, depending on how generous you want to be. I'm going to be mostly generous and call it 99%. And you can then select which offer you want to put it on. The reason why this isn't going to pull down for me is the offer hasn't actually been published yet. But if it was, when I clicked on this drop-down, a menu would come out and it would give me which offer I wanted to put it on. And then I could also go in and select of the different variants or SKUs which one I wanted to tie this to. So if you have kind of the entry level, the middle tier, those bundles, you could select which of those bundles you wanted to tie this particular promotion to. And then you can go and set a validity period. You can either make it a short-term time limited or set it up as it just never ends. And then you can also control the number of redemptions that someone can use this code. So if for example, we were to do a conference here, well, actually, Bing Translator actually did this at their last conference. They went and created a code, and they just put it on flyers on the seat. So as people came in to see their session, they said, oh, and by the way, if you enter this code for the next 45 days or whatever it was, you will be able to use this service for free. So you can go and set that by either, you know, anyone who enters the code can do it, or it can be kind of a one-time thing if it's kind of more of a contest, you know, the first 5 people, the first 100 people, and you can then go and set that. And then when you click OK, it then sets that that promotion based on the offer that you set.
So you can discount by percentage, you discount by dollar
amount? You cannot. Right now, it's just the percentage. So you'd have to go and look at what your dollar amount is and then kind of go, okay, well, I wanted it to be, you know, $20 off, and well, it was a, you know, $100 SKU, so I want to discount by 20%. We don't have that.
So that is something that we haven't documented yet.
Ah, we do have that.
But I'm able to say that because I actually verified before this conference that we are intending to document it. And so, yeah, you can programmatically create these. For your scenario, that would allow you to specify what that actual serial number is. So it can be user individual. And you would specify one redemption, exactly like you said. Yep.
Just the way the demo is presented, it gives the impression that it's you are dealing with one type of data that just needs one shot to upload. I mean, you upload it only once. But this is not the case in many applications. Like, for example, the stock market, where you need to have to upload data on daily basis continuously. So how does the marketplace handle this kind of applications?
Do you mind if I take this one, Roger?
Sure.
So we probably should have been more clear about this, but the marketplace never actually owns any data. We are a proxy between the database and the data consumer. And so for live data sets, in fact, for some of our financial data sets and for some of our weather data sets, the underlying databases are constantly churning and being updated. And so every time you query them, you're likely to get different results because they're getting new data into place. And so the marketplace knows how to make the query. It's up to the underlying provider to generate the response as up to date as possible. So in your scenario, you know, let's say here in my application, I knew I was dealing with live data. I might have a little thread running in the background that every 30 seconds pulls and just give me the latest results. And as long as they change in the underlying backend database, I'm going to get them in the client. We try to keep the marketplace itself purely value add, but as thin of a wrapper on top of the database as we can make it, exactly to support these scenarios. Yes. Yes. So again, you actually don't ever upload the data to us. If you were to be uploading data, I would probably work with you and recommend that let's set up a SQL Server instance in Windows Azure for you. And then you can have SQL Azure Data Sync or any number of technologies to push your data into this database. And we would only just query that database and assume it's always up to date. So there is this need of having a internet visible container for your data. But once that's in place, we'll always be getting the latest data from you.
To the data market itself, the marketplace is free. So we're, so you publish for free. We have a revenue share for commercial data sets. So this one, for example, the $450 SKU. So we have a 20% revenue share. So if someone purchases that, we'd go process that payment, withhold our 20%, and then load the rest directly into your bank account that you set up as a publisher. You have a question?
Yep. So really good question. Schema management is something that we spend a lot of time working on within the marketplace because We've built a great deal of expertise around what is safe to change in your schema and what is not. For example, if you're using OData, it's generally safe to add new tables. It's generally safe to add new columns to those tables. It's never safe to remove them because you're going to break one of your customers. So we have a couple of ways of dealing with what's essentially the versioning of your schema. All of these are currently handled not through the portal, but offline with my team. So we would work with you on essentially a consulting basis to figure out what is the right way to expose this. Does it mean we extend your current offer? Does it mean we publish a new offer that has, you know, maybe different price points because of the added value? Or do we potentially replace your current offer because there's going to be a breaking change, and then we have kind of a wind down process so that folks who have already paid don't feel like they've missed out on something that they've paid for? So I guess the short answer is it depends, as always, but we're very familiar and comfortable with making schema changes in the right way when necessary. I see. So you're saying if you want to offer something to a enterprise and they want to buy 100 seats. Got it. So as a publisher, you have a business guy and you have a tech guy, and they both need to play nicely together in the publishing portal. So the way we handle this today is we recommend that each publisher creates a live ID for their company and they share that amongst one another. It's personally, I think, one of the more important things we need to go tackle in the near future to actually create these separate personas. And maybe, you know, the tech guy doesn't get bugged with all the financial information and vice versa. But so far, we do have this kind of shared ID model that we use. Yep.
I have one question here. You showed a lot of discoverability of the data. What if you have an application? Is there a means for an application to go find the data and then bring the user in to pay for the data? Say a hot link scenario. I've got a link on my phone.
Fantastic question. So I mentioned earlier, kind of in passing, that we do support three-legged OAuth in the marketplace. And the three-legged OAuth flow, if you're familiar with OAuth, you'd register your application, the marketplace is registered, the user would then try to build a relationship across the two. When you present a user with a link asking them to grant access to that application to use their subscription to some data source, if we find that they don't have a subscription, we automatically redirect them into a purchase flow. And so all of the UI is provided and all the filtering is provided. So you can say, you know, I want Eurex with 500 transactions per month. And so we would take the user to a very dedicated UI flow in the browser. They'd go through and purchase that, and then we'd send them back to you with all the information you need to access that data. And so there's documentation on MSDN about that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about how to actually implement it. But yeah, that's an out-of-the-box service available to all of our content providers and all of our purchasers. Yep. Yes, sir.
So is there a way to create a private offering as a publisher where I say, I want only these three of my customers?
Yep. Yeah, there absolutely is. And there's various levels at which you can do this. The kind of two pivots are who gets to subscribe to your offer, and the second pivot is who gets to be advertised that offer, right? So let's say that you want everybody to be able to know about the offer because you want the extra eyeballs, but you only want specific people to be able to use it. Roger pointed out that you can make 0% discount coupons. And so that's exactly what you would do in that case. You would create a coupon, and there was a checkbox that says coupon required for this offer. And only folks who knew that coupon code would be able to subscribe to it. But it's still visible in the marketplace for everyone to generate interest. If you didn't even want it to be visible to other folks, we can mark it as hidden, and then people won't even find it unless you tell them where to go.
So you just give them an offer code.
Yep.
And it's
Exactly.
And one other question. So on the consumer side, if you have SQL, Azure as a destination, is there an easy way to push to that without having to create an application between the push?
If you want to push data from the marketplace into a SQL Azure database?
Yep.
Yeah, so I think we talked about this briefly earlier. We don't have that in place today, but it's something that we've started talking about.
But yep. It should be a fairly easy process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yep.
Kind of pull it back down.
I think the biggest challenge will be where do you run this code? But you know, I'm sure we'll figure it out.
And just to close on your first question, the box right here kind of in the middle require a promotion code? This is the box that you would check that would someone would need. This would say, hey, if you don't have a code, you won't be able to actually purchase this software. Yes, exactly. All right, so that concludes. Thank you. Please fill out the evaluation at the on the TechEd website, and if you have any other questions, we will take them offline here. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks, everybody.